Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Jimmy Moyaha from Independent Analyst and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Alex, I'll start with you there. Can you give us a local market wrap? I mean, the JSE seems to be, you know, doing much better than, you know, its offshore counterparts. How did we close today?
Good evening. Yeah, so we saw a bit of a rally in the market today. I mean, normally the resource industrials did quite well. If you think of some of the big movements that happened today, likes of Renet up over 4%, Sabania up over 4%, so that gives you a sense of industrials and as well as in the resources. And the downside, of course, Capitec was down over 9%, and Harmony also down quite big, as well as Anglo Plat. So a bit of a mixed bag, but overall, I think a decent day in our market.
Yeah, so decent day in local markets indeed. I mean, there's no rug pulling happening on the local front, but if we move to our offshore markets, it's been 2 days now where, you know, the U.S. market, you're seeing the futures during our market, when our market is open, the futures there are doing exceptionally well. And then, you know, when it's time to open, they open in the red. But at least we had one big green day yesterday. But today, that seemed to have reversed. Alex?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the moment, sentiment is very, very fragile. So based on any sort of economic news, good or bad, you'll see big movements in the market. So was the big news today is in the ECB, they raised interest rates by 75 basis points. The Fed's most likely going to follow suit a bit later this month. And also the Reserve Bank also probably will do a 50 to 75 basis points. So it's all still about interest rates, about inflation and economic activity. Now, we've seen a bit of a big mixed bag in the US regarding economic activity. So jobless claims was quite good, numbers there. But also if you look at the housing, was under pressure. So you see, you've got strong employment, but yet housing prices are under pressure. We know that lower consumers are under pressure, and the U.S., of course, is in technical recession as well. There's all of these factors are having impact on the market. So markets like a yo-yo at the moment. We'd have a couple of days going up, and then it will simply reverse again. A bit directionless at the moment, but certainly I think there's more risk to the downside at the moment considering the economic situation and the valuation specifically in the U.S. But yeah, things can change quickly. We simply do not know what's going to happen in, you know, the next 6 or 12 months. But, you know, it's very it's very important to be selective on accounts as you like.
Yeah.
Quality companies will eventually get through the cycle and give returns. But there are a lot of businesses out there that's got questionable business models, very high valuations, and you could be in for a world of pain if you hold those companies.
Yeah. You've made a good point, which we've repeatedly made on the show. So to say that it's going to be a stock picker's market during all of this turmoil and a lot of volatility. I mean, it always sounds like we're speaking our own game, but I mean, if you're just buying the whole market as a whole, you're definitely, you know, down a lot and you're not quite happy. But obviously, depending on which counters you've chosen as well on the individual side, it hasn't been easier either, to say the least. Hence why maybe you should just take your money and give it to, you know, experts. I don't know. The first question here, Jimmy, is from the SMS line, which says, is Coronation a good option in these markets? Thanks. This is from Barry.
Well, so, I mean, Coronation, much like the other asset managers, is speaking to the point that you've just made around potentially just leaving your money with the experts and that sort of thing. I think if you look at Coronation as a stock individually and at the performance that they've been able to deliver, you can see that they have been able to achieve quite decent returns at this stage. I guess for someone with a lower risk appetite or a risk appetite that isn't going to be as volatile as what you might find in a gold stock, for example, at this stage, or an oil stock at this stage, you probably are better off looking at something like a Coronation, like you said, with the experts that they have behind there. I think if you're going to look at something along the lines of Coronation, you might want to look at an alternative Insignia as well. They've been doing quite well in recent times. They've also got a couple of things in the pipeline there as well. So if you are in that space and you're looking along those lines, personally, I might be a bit more impartial towards Signia.
Yeah, interesting. So you like Signia more, which is, you know, sort of a low-cost entrance in the market or player. This one is from Sudhir, who says, would you sell this share? If so, what would you buy with the cash? So the share is referring to here. Well, it's a lot of shares, but we'll talk about the first one, which is Brait. We have not got a question about Brait in a very long time here, Alex. So I'm keen to hear your thoughts on Brait.
Sure. Obviously, yeah, I mean, Brait experienced a lot of changes, let's call it, over the last 5 to 10 years. So Brait, obviously, you know, if you look at the portfolio of the they've got, the Premier Foods is still being, I guess, ready for being a listing.
Yes.
They've got, of course, the stake in a private equity business, EFOS. So that business, they've also got, of course, investments in the likes of Virgin Active and so forth. So the problem with Brait is they've got been lots of operational issues in the underlying business, as well as debt in underlying companies, as well as debt in the centers. There's a triple leverage type of operational leverage with combined two different type of leverages. And that's really caused this business to really spiral out of control. I mean, this business used to be, up until 2015, I think it was the darling of the market. I think Brait at one stage at 160, somewhere there. So
yeah, you say darling of the market. I remember one, you know, market rockstar once got asked the question, well, what type of investor would go out there and buy a company like Brait at $150? And says, well, the type of investor wants to make money. Well, I guess that was the top.
Well, perhaps to answer the viewer's question, I used to be quite bullish on Brait. I think it was about 2010 or so when they changed the structure until about 2014 or so. I was really bullish on the counter. Ever since then, I've never considered buying it back again. And even at these levels, I still don't think it's worthwhile to look into it. Yes, it's cheap, but it's cheap for a reason. It's got a lot of operational issues there, a lot of debt-related issues. I'm not convinced what's of the assets in the Air Force and so forth. But, you know, for me,
you would
this
sell.
Doesn't excite me. So, I don't necessarily sell it. Well, I won't buy it. So, yes, I would imagine, yeah. There have been opportunities globally as well as locally in Brait market.
Yeah, and then he says, what would you do then with the cash? Because he's definitely in the green on this because he bought it at 2.90.
Well, let's look at it differently. So think of locally, I mean, SA Inc. is quite cheap at the moment.
Yeah.
And if you look at SA market in general, there's lots of opportunities. My stock pick later, I'll highlight one of those. But if you think of the banks, for example, they are... Yeah, they are very attractive from a relations perspective. There are a bunch of other industrial companies are looking quite cheap. Obviously, globally, we've seen quite a bit of sell-off in the markets. If you're willing to look through the noise, I'd imagine, you know, buying a UK or European ETF is not a bad option if you don't want to buy specific stocks. Perhaps the US is a little bit still on the expensive side of things, but certainly there are a lot better opportunities, I think, locally and globally. You know, if you're medium or longer term, then trying to make some sort of return holding Brait.
Okay. I like that. I think that was a thorough answer to Brait and, you know, the options that come, you know, with selling and then obviously having the cash. Jimmy, do you have anything to add? Or maybe what would you buy, you know, with the proceeds?
I think I 100% agree with Alex in that I would not be putting my money with Brait at this stage, nor would I be selling it, given that you're essentially relying on the fact that the stock would go back below the 3 Rand level. I mean, if he's in at 2.95, he's up about a Rand on that. I'd probably put the money towards something else. If I had the cash, it'd probably sit somewhere where I've had a long favorite for a while in terms of some of the stocks that we've given out in the past. But also an ETF. Surprisingly enough, we're struggling for value in terms of certain stocks at this stage.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily because the stocks themselves are underperforming, but it's rather around the overall sentiment around markets, around equity markets, and the performance that equity markets are going through at the moment. So possibly look at a high yielding ETF, if not look at a longer term or a medium term dated treasury bond. Something unconventional for starters. I mean, I guess it is more to do with the individual's timeline or time horizon in terms of when they're looking to achieve that return. That will determine sort of what asset class to best invest it in, alongside, of course, their risk appetite. But I definitely agree with Alex in that. At the moment, BREIT is not something I would go very close towards. And there's a significant number of better alternatives at this stage.
Okay, fantastic. On the SMS line again, we have another question from Joe, who says, your thoughts on Aspen, please. Is there a hold or a sell here? Alex?
Sure. My colleagues will know that I've never been a fan of Aspen before. So,
man, Alex, you're a rock star. I like that. Some of us had to learn the hard way.
So, I mean, Aspen for me has been too acquisitive over the years, and as a result, they came into trouble. That's why they had to sell a lot of bunch of assets and so forth. But the fact of the matter is there's very limited organic growth potential in the portfolio. Even the latest results, we saw very limited organic growth in the business. However, to give them some credit, they have fixed the balance sheet quite a lot, and they're probably in a position now to do some deals again. But once again, it brings in the risk that they had in the past. My big issue with Aspen is the way they value the intangibles on the balance sheet. They, every single year over the last 5 years, they've changed the assumptions, making it more aggressive to keep the valuations high. Instead of amortizing those intangibles, they have an indefinite life on these things. That's quite an unusual type of accounting. In my opinion, that, in my view, that overstates the earnings of the business. So that PE, it might look attractive, but I think it's not a true reflection of economic reality. And for us, in the course of that, you know, I just got question marks about the business. Also, the way they've used to account for some of the acquisitions they've done in the past and so forth. You know, it just doesn't excite me. There's no growth, questionable some of the accounting. Yeah, and they've got acquisition risk. And they look at the share price performance over the last 5 years, it reflects that. It's been a dismal performer. But saying that at current levels is probably fair value, I think, Aspen. You can probably do worse than buying Aspen at these levels. But I can't see Aspen being a massive value creator, in my view, over the medium to long term for these levels.
So you don't see a catalyst. Interesting there. What did you make of today's interest rate hike, you know, in the UK? And obviously, people are saying that, you know, with the recent narrative from the Fed, we should see ourselves, you know, towards the 3.5 to 3.75% or 3.8% mark towards December, meaning they're going to be hiking interest rates every month for the remaining months, which, you know, there is no cause for celebration. Any thoughts on the two matters and what it means for markets and my portfolio and your portfolio?
Well, I mean, from a UK perspective and certainly from a US perspective, the UK at the moment is experiencing their highest levels of inflation in history, as far as I can tell. And the concern around that, of course, is the fact that much like the US and much like other markets, is if something isn't done towards curbing that, the longer that they take to deal with that, the longer it's going to take for them to then reverse the effects of inflation and then get inflation back under a controlled and manageable level. I mean, if you think of these sorts of the countries, the UK and the US, for the longest time, they've considered sort of 1.5 to 2.5% inflation being considerably steep. And for them to suddenly be at 8, 9, some even 10% inflation in some figures, it's a significant difference, and it's a significant challenge for them. Couple that with, for the UK, what's happening with the energy crisis, what's happening with the Russia gas pipeline being turned off indefinitely that we spoke about. I think from an inflationary standpoint, there's very little that central banks are able to do in terms of addressing that from their mandate. their mandate where it relates to being able to manage inflation and being able to use tools to get inflation under control is limited towards things like interest rate hikes. The U.S. has already said that regardless of how stable they start to see things turn out from a job market perspective and that sort of thing, they are going to continue to hike rates and manage the inflationary conversation and the inflationary situation. Now, what that means for you and I, if we're looking at our portfolios, is that we're going to continue to experience volatility in certain respects. The market can only price in a certain degree of that, and the market will price in as much of it as it can. It might then start to phase it out over a certain period of time and that sort of thing. But as we've seen with economic data, is that as certain sets of data start to come out, they become more and more important in terms of guidance from the Fed's perspective and from other central banks' perspective, and therefore they create those larger spikes in volatility and give us the those sharper moves along our portfolios and that sort of thing. So I think at the moment, if you're looking at your stock portfolios and that sort of thing, you want to be looking at ensuring that there's as much balance as possible. Yeah. Yes, you could be seeking out returns in this time of increased volatility because with the movement in volatility, it does present itself with great opportunity to achieve greater returns than normal, but it also does present the same downside in terms of a risk-based thing. Okay. And if you're looking at your portfolio, you want to be managing your portfolio from a 3 to 5 year plan, some people even longer than that,
yeah.
And you don't want to be looking at the noise that's going to come in the next 12 to 18 months from interest rates, decision making that has to happen because of where inflation yeah. levels are. So you can leave a certain portion of your portfolio tied down towards chasing that level of attractive return and that sort of thing, but don't restructure and reposition your entire portfolio based on that, because this is going to be a temporary thing. There will come a point where interest rates are hiked to what they consider a ceiling, being central banks, and then things will start to reverse and slow down, and those market cycles will follow due course.
Yeah.
And at that point, you don't want to have to rebalance your portfolio again.
Yeah, I mean, we've been told this story before, that you can only control sort of financial services, demand or supply when it comes to, with interest rates, but you can't control inflation in sort of your more staples and sort of needs, hard goods that are out there. So we're learning that the hard way. I think someone told me, they're much older than me, and I said, shut up, boomer. But look, we're learning these very hard. Anything to add there, Alex, before we move back to our stocks?
Well, I mean, look, my preference is for a more bottom-up approach.
Okay.
I mean, so if you want to take a medium to long-term view, I prefer to buy quality companies that I want to hold for medium to long-term basis. Obviously, the top-down factors that Jimmy refers to has impact on the valuation. So whenever a quality company that you already own then sells off, I simply top up that business. Or perhaps opportunity to buy a business brings itself. For example, let's say you're not the owner of Microsoft and pulls down 20-30%, you're like, perhaps I'm going to pick up some Microsoft today. So
okay. That's
more my approach. Buy companies you want to hold over in the long term and use this changes in the cycle as opportunities to top up or perhaps even sell some, take some profits when an opportunity presents itself.
Okay, Jimmy, we promised to come back to Aspen. So your thoughts on Aspen?
I think I'm not too excited by Aspen, if I'm very honest. If I'm looking at a technical price chart of Aspen, we've sort of come off of highs in what, 2018. We retested those highs around August of 2021, just below that 300 Rand a share level. It sort of looks like, almost looks like a double top there. And we've really just been on a downward sort of trend since then.
Yeah.
We've come back to sit below 150 Rand a share. So I'm not seeing much excitement from Aspen. Alex was very right. He hit the nail on the head when he mentioned that unless there's a significant level of innovation, whether it's in acquisitions, whether it's in R&D, whether it's in what they do from a business perspective, I can't really see what's going to give rise to a significant move up in the share price. And for me, as much as you want to have sort of a stable stocks in your portfolio, you also want the stocks that are stable to be performing to a certain degree. So personally, I'm not very excited about Aspen at these levels. I'd want to see them do something that would warrant an investment case or make an investment case on their behalf at this stage. But those that are holding the stock, I also don't see further significant downside. It's bounced off of key support levels there, but I think we might just see a bit of consolidation from Aspen at this stage.
Okay.
While they announce their next move to us.
So you're also not that bullish on Aspen, and probably rightfully so. We've got a question here from Koketo who says, which retailer would you buy between Pick n Pay and Pepco at these levels for the long term? So I guess it's a very interesting question here, Alex. We've never gotten something of this nature. I mean, it's the one is a food retailer, the other one is a diversified retailer. So
yeah, I mean, it's a good question. So I think let's start off Pepco first. I mean, it's a type of company I sometimes wish I can be the CEO, just so I can actually make the change that's necessary in business. I mean, there's lots of, they could just get rid of some of the bad businesses in the business, you know, sell it or unbundle it and focus on the core business, which is Pep itself as well as Ackermans. I think they've got, those are very strong brands, very strong operational prospects over the long term. These other assets, like, for example, Credible Connection, Hi-Fi Corp, you know, the building materials business, JD Group, those are all very subpar-based assets, and I want them to get rid of those, and I think it will create a lot of value. So Pepco, you can buy it, and we hope that's going to happen, but unlikely. However, they have recently moved into the Brazilian market. It remains to be seen what they're going to do there. But Pepco, I like the core part of the business. I don't like the rest. Pick n Pay is an interesting one. I think they have done lots of groundwork over the last year to get a business position where it is today.
Yeah.
Obviously, within the year, they've changed. You know, this focus now more on the lower LSM, so you're going to see the likes of Boxer being rolled out very, very aggressively. If you look at their margin, the business is very, very low compared to something like a ShopRite. And if they can gain market share and get the warehousing right and logistics and so forth, it's very likely they can actually increase their EBIT margins up higher. And that will mean very strong earnings growth over the medium term. So I think there is some optionality in Pick n Pay, and I think it could be an interesting investment case. If it takes something like a ShopRite, which is a high-quality business, they're probably already at peak margins and most likely going to lose market share from these levels. So as a result, Pick n Pay is probably the opposite of that. Most likely going to gain market share and gain margins. And as a result, makes it quite a compelling investment case in my view.
Yeah, and Jimmy, we've got about a minute here to talk about these stocks. Which one would you go for between the two?
Pepco.
Why?
I hear Alex's point around certain non-performing assets being, or the need to have them sort of removed from the portfolio. But if you look at Pepco's performing assets, you look at Pep, you look at Ackermans, you look at the LSM groups that those two target, you look at the revamp that Pep has gone through in terms of rolling out the different divisions being your traditional Peps now with Pep Home coming into the fold and that sort of thing.
That's changing the game big time.
And they're targeting the South African population where the South African population can afford it. They're not the price point on product and the price point that they are reaching in terms of the market that they're reaching is spot on. They're not overpricing their products. They're not undervaluing themselves. It's the ability to continuously open new stores every year, continuously achieve a profit from your core businesses. I'm liking Pepco so much more.
Yeah, okay. We'll jump into our stock picks there. We've got about 2 minutes. Jimmy, your stock pick?
I've given it out before. I'll give it out again. CrowdStrike. Main reason for this is we've got a lot of concerns around returns and the market conditions and what we're sitting with around the world, not just in South Africa. And if you're looking at certain spaces, I mean, if you take the semiconductor space, for example, they're going to be impacted by supply chain constraints. You look at all other companies that have reported in recent times, whether it's quarterly reports, quarterly earnings numbers or half-year earnings numbers, their concerns are around supply chains in terms of delivering things. With a company like CrowdStrike, you have none of those concerns. You're dealing with a business where the more we have information out in the open and out in terms of the online space and the internet space, things like remote working, logging in from Wi-Fi, things that are not office-based and all of that, the greater the need for security and internet security and information security. CrowdStrike's been at the forefront of that for the longest time, and they hold a lot of large clients. So your clients that are sitting with CrowdStrike technology and CrowdStrike infrastructure are not necessarily going to
cut back on security
at that stage.
I'm sold on CrowdStrike, and I like the annuity model, which, you know, makes sense. Definitely bullish there. Alex, your pick for the evening?
Yeah, so I alluded earlier that I think ESA Inc. is quite attractive, and one of those that I think are very cheap is Truett.
Okay.
Right, so I think Truett's, if you use a valuation perspective, right, so it's currently the dividend yield of about high sevens. Now, before COVID, it was trading in between 5 and 5.5. Right, so I think that just gives a sense of the upside potential if the stock can re-rate. Yes, earnings growth on this base is probably going to be muted if you take a medium-term view, but they generate so much cash that they can pay very high dividends, do share buybacks, and if needed, do the optional acquisition. And at the same time, it's a business that produces very high ROEs, an excess of over 40%. So this is a high-quality business, in my view, that doesn't get the love in the market because it's not the so-called sexy stock, so-called growth and so forth. But it's exactly the type of stock you want in an environment when things are tough, because they know how to push their business model to the max, and I think you're going to get very good total returns from Truett's levels. Remember, dividends is a very big component of the returns. Just if you buy Truett's, most likely half of your returns are going to come from dividends.
Okay.
You're going to be well in excess of inflation and do very, very well.
Okay, fantastic. So you're bullish on Truett. So we're going with Truett's and CrowdStrike's for tonight. Thank you very much, gents. Thanks to my guests, Jimmy Moyaha, who's an independent analyst, and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Do join Zinathi for the Friday edition of Stock Watch tomorrow. Send those questions during the day via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. The show airs live at 19:30. Have a good evening and have a good weekend. I'm gonna go get some more.